Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host of the day, Anthony Wood, and with me today is a football analyst for the Houston Texans, Mr. John Harris. John, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Anthony. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
It's always fantastic to hear from a fellow Texan. So first of all, what have you seen so far and what have you heard so far from OTAs this week? How have they been going?
They've been going well, obviously. Here's what well means. Nobody has gotten hurt as far as we know. So that to me is a good thing. I got asked this yesterday when I did some radio yesterday about, what's a successful OTA? And I just said, look, as long as everybody comes out of there healthy, then especially considering the injury situation the Texans have had, then you got to feel pretty good. But look, as it pertains to the offensive line, you're not going to know a whole lot about them. The defensive line, probably not much. But you get to see some young receivers taking that leap. You get to see Vincent Smith and Kiki QT. Then you see the rookie undrafteds, in particular, Tyron Johnson, Stephen Lewis. You also get to see those guys, Jester Weah in his second year, making that first year to second year jump. So those guys are getting a lot of time and a lot of reps with Deshaun Watson, A.J. McCarron. And I think that's really going to make that group really solid. I think it's going to make it a really tough cut when it comes to the 53-man roster when we get to September.
Certainly. And I remember a few weeks ago, Bill O'Brien made one of my favorite comments so far. He called this He called the Combine the Underwear Olympics and basically said that this wasn't an overly important time in terms of there's no pads, obviously, so there's only so much they can really do. But like you said, it's great to see some of the receivers out there and the backs as well. And we really get to see what they can possibly do going into this training camp. So have any players really stood out to you so far?
Well, I think the one, and I just mentioned him a second ago, that it's funny because when I studied him 2 years ago, and I watched him during the regular season. But when I really focused on watching him, and I talked to people at Texas Tech, and I've got a good friend of mine who's a sideline reporter for Texas Tech. His name is Chris Lovell. And I said, Chris, tell me about Kiki QT. Like, give me something that I don't know that I can find out watching on film. And he just went on, like, he gushed about him and just said, look, this is the kind of guy you want to have. And so when the Texans drafted him, I was really excited. And I knew what he could do and watched him at OTAs, watched him at the beginning of training camp in 2018 at the Greenbrier. I thought, man, this guy is on pace to catch about 100 passes. And then about that second week of training camp, you don't see him at practice and you see him going over with the trainers. And I'm like, oh, no. That's the last thing you wanted to see was a rookie with potential over with the trainers. But TTQT and when he did get on the field showed such skill, such quickness, such explosiveness at a position, that slot receiver position, the Texans really haven't had. My good friend David Anderson was really the only true slot receiver the Texans have had that really fit the stereotypical slot receiver mold. Watching Tiki as he's healthy in OTAs and watching him get open to get separation and watch defensive backs really struggle to stay with him. He's so quick and so sudden. I guess the word now is twitchy.
Yeah.
But he's the guy that every time he is lined up to run a route, whether it's one-on-ones or seven-on-seven or team, it's hard to take your eyes off of Kiki QT and what he can do. If you were going to give an OTA MVP, it's probably QT, and for good reason. I mean, there's no Hopkins, there's no Fuller. It's the one guy that's got a lot of time with Deshaun Watson. So Deshaun's looking for him, but there's a reason. He's open. And so Deshaun is finding him. So QT is the guy to me that has really stood out these entire OTAs.
Well, that's fantastic to hear, especially obviously that he's getting so much time with Deshaun. I mean, that's only going to benefit him entering his second year. He obviously knows the playbook better now. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what we can expect from him, because I know at his time at Texas Tech, he never really had any injury problems at all. So last year really was a one-off for him. So hopefully he can get back to full fitness now and carry on where he left off, because he showed such fantastic talent last season. So I was wondering, given that you have such an in-depth knowledge of this team, I'd like to take the opportunity to focus perhaps on a couple of the players on the fringes of the roster, starting, if I may, with Jermaine Kelly, cornerback. Obviously, entering his second year, he didn't get to play his rookie year because of an injury. He had a great pass breakup against Vincent Smith this week. What have you seen from him so far, and what do you think we can expect from him this season?
Well, you know, we talk about Anthony, you know, seeing OTAs, we get to see every third practice. So essentially, we get to see one a week. And to be honest, Jermaine, I thought really struggled in week two, last week. I thought he really struggled. And when they were outside, I just felt like, boy, he's having a tough day. And look, that happens. When you're playing cornerback in this league, you're just going to have bad days. And unfortunately, the Texans have had a lot of bad days at corner, especially at the end of last year. And Jermaine had a bad day. And that's the thing. When you're seeing one a week, one every three practices, you're like, is that indicative of how he's playing, or is that just a bad day? Well, watching him this week, he has a great interception on the sideline. He's got the pass breakup you spoke about, Anthony. He made plays, and it was just a different-looking player. And it's kind of the cool thing about OTAs and kind of the frustrating thing is you see him make plays after having a bad day, and you're like, okay, maybe that was just a bad day, and this is the real Jermaine Kelly. But because we didn't even get to see him practice last year, it's really hard to tell. He's a guy that struggled with some injury issues at Washington as a receiver. Then he transferred to San Jose State. And, you know, he was nicked up a little bit at San Jose State too. But, you know, played through it and got to a point where he was a draftable prospect. And when you see him, Anthony, you're like, whoa, that guy's put together for a corner. Like, he's good size. I mean, he's 6 foot, a good solid 200, 205 pounds. And I don't think he's got an ounce of body fat. I mean, I'll be honest, there's a little bit of body envy when I see him. But it just comes down to getting the experience and getting back on the field and getting back in that rhythm of playing football, because last year was nothing but classroom time and rehab. He didn't practice, and so you got to kind of get back in that. And I think Jermaine's kind of going through that. But he's a confident guy. He knows what he can do. He loves football. And I could see, even when he was having that bad day, like, I could see it starting to affect him. And it's like, look, when you play that position, a corner, you've got to be able to handle the highs and lows and everything that goes with it. And the great ones can do that. You know, I watch Jalen Ramsey twice a year, and he goes against Hopkins, and it's like, both of them know. I mean, Ramsey in particular knows, look, I know Hop's going to get his. I know it, but I got to battle and keep going because there's going to be a play I make that can change this game. And he plays with that confidence. And I think Jermaine has that confidence, and I don't want him to lose that. But I want to see that consistency start to grow. And hopefully we'll be able to see that in training camp, because we'll see that every single day. And that's when you can really see the progress. And is he making progress? Or was that just a bad day? Or is he not a great player who had an excellent day? You know, and you start to kind of figure that out in training camp. And that's one of the frustrating things about OTAs. But I watch Jermaine, and I see him. I see the skills you want to see in a corner, but now making that, and really it's hard to say that first year, second year leap, because he didn't even do anything last year other than rehab. But he knows where the cafeteria is. He knows the defense. He has some of those things down. So really the transition as being a rookie in some sense will be a little bit easier for him. But look, this team really needs, and I'm not breaking any new news, this team needs guys that can cover. They need guys that can cover. And if Jermaine Kelly proves that he can cover one-on-one, get in a guy's face, lock him up, press coverage, stay with him all over the field, and prevent receptions, he's going to find a way on this field. There's no question. He's got to do that consistently, but he's got the athletic ability to be able to do that. Now, he's got to make sure that he's got the technique down, he's got the defense down, and he doesn't lose confidence when he gets beat on a play, comes right back and stops the next one. That's got to be his biggest challenge going forward in 2019.
Absolutely, and I must admit, I find it very encouraging seeing that after a year off and after some, I mean, college, like you mentioned, he was in and out all the time because of injury. Despite that, and despite that lack of playing time, particularly this last year, he's come back from a poor week last week, and he's played as well as he did this week. I find that very encouraging to see. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he does once he's brushed a bit more of that rust off, once he's back in playing shape a bit more. So I'm really looking forward to that. But sticking on the topic of Vincent Smith, how do you think he's doing in his second year now that he's had a full year in that system? He's looked quite good from what I've been able to see so far. But what have you seen and heard about him so far?
He's been all that and a bag of chips, Anthony. He's been really, really good. We talk so much about Will Fuller, and I love Will. and I love what Will brings to this team. And it's so funny because Will is so unassuming. You know, Will just smokes defensive backs and then comes to the sideline. It's, you know, it's basically like he just had lunch. Like, yeah, no big deal. Yeah, it's fine. And he's so amazing to watch. And that deep element really fits Deshaun. And I think when Will went down, I think people miss what not having that deep threat did for Deshaun. Deshaun loves to throw the ball deep. Bill O'Brien loves to throw the ball deep. He's always talked about that. He loves to throw the ball deep. There's so many advantages to being able to throw the ball deep and be effective throwing it down the field. And when Will was gone, they didn't have that. And really wasn't until Vincent came on late in the year where they felt like they at least had an option. Because when they had DeAndre on the field with Demaryius Thomas, they didn't have really that ability. Now, DeAndre can go deep in large part because he can just catch the ball from the top of somebody's head. But Demaryius was not at that point in his career where throwing it deep was going to be effective. So it was just, I don't say it was fruitless, but it's just that option really wasn't there. And when you put Vincent in the game, though, all of a sudden, he's got the opportunity to go by him. And we talked to Deshaun back in the spring, and we were asking about that play in Philadelphia, and we were asking him about Vincent. And he said, yeah, you know, I went to Vincent, and I said, look, if you get number 32 in coverage and he doesn't have his eyes on you, you smoke that guy and I'll hit you. I'll find you. And they got that look on third down, and Deshaun knew right away. He said, I'm going to Vincent. I was going to Vincent. And he told him to be ready. And then Vincent goes and makes a play. I think the biggest thing for Vin last year was just adapting to the speed of the game and the physicality of NFL defensive backs. I mean, the first defensive back that he faced last year in an NFL game was Stephon Gilmore in the Patriots. I mean, that's an all-pro corner, one of the best in the league. He went from playing at Limestone College to playing against Stephon Gilmore. So there was a lot to learn, I think, for Vin last year, but he needed the time to really get to a point where he could feel comfortable, not so much, oh, my gosh, I'm in the NFL, but, hey, I'm going to go make these catches today. I'm going to go make these plays today. And I think he got to that point at the end of the year, and I think that confidence has just continued to grow with him as we want it to. And you can see it at practice. You can see that deep threat. You know, I brought up Will Fuller. When we didn't have Will Fuller, you're like, well, what are we going to do? Well, now you look out there and say, hey, wait a second, Vin's out there. We're okay. We can throw the ball deep. Vincent can smoke these guys. And not only that, Deshaun has confidence in him going deep and that he'll make a play on the ball. And I think that's one of the bigger aspects for a young receiver is, does your quarterback have confidence in you? And obviously with a guy like Tom Brady, well, you really have got to build that confidence and build it pretty quickly, or he's just going to phase you out. I don't think it's the same with Deshaun. I think Deshaun's a little bit more welcoming. He understands a little bit more. But he wants to throw the ball deep, and if Vin can get deep, he's going to get the football. And I think that's one of the aspects. If Will Fuller, for some reason, is not able to go, I think they'll have more confidence going to Vincent Smith and having him be more part of the offense in this second year. Now, that's a tough nut to crack in that wide receiver crew. You've got those three guys with Hopkins, Fuller, and QT. I don't want to say that Vince is a lock, but if he continues what he's doing, he'll definitely be a lock at number four. And I feel like you got to get him on the field in some way, shape, or form because he'll make some plays. So from that perspective, I think Vincent Smith's got a really good opportunity to be a part of this receiver crew. Is he going to catch 80 passes? No. But can he catch 20 to 25? And if there's a one-week injury to Will Fuller or to QT that he could step in and do some good things, yes, I think he could absolutely do that. I think he has grown immensely, and I can't wait to see what he's able to do as we go through the rest of OTAs, mini camp, and then on to training camp.
What excites me most about what you just said, I have to admit, it's not only obviously you mentioned the confidence, but the fact that Deshaun Watson had confidence in him in his rookie year as well, that he was so confident that he was going to be a safe target to go for in his first year coming out of Limestone, like you mentioned. I think that's fantastic to hear. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do because he's got such great speed. And like you mentioned, with Will Fuller obviously struggling with injuries, we need another threat nice deep out there. So yep. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do this year, I must admit. So What about the undrafted receivers that they've brought in? They've brought in, obviously, Dixon, Johnson, and Lewis, and then they've also got Jester Ware in, who they had last year, obviously, but had issues last year, injuries. So what do you think about those four guys? What do you think they've got to offer, and how good do you think their chances are of making this roster?
Well, here's, you know, we talked about this, Anthony, a few times, and I'm not sure really where I kind of fall with this argument. If you felt like Hopkins, Fuller, and QT could stay healthy for 16 games, and you had Vincent Smith as the number four wide receiver, maybe you would only carry five wide receivers because you've got four tight ends, and I can see where they could keep all four. So trying to figure out the numbers, it's difficult. Making it even more difficult are the guys that you just mentioned. I think every one of them adds something, and I'll throw a guy in there that you did mention that we saw for one play last year, and that's Stevie Mitchell.
Yeah.
And Stevie really made an impression on the coaches with his speed. I mean, he roasted that Jaguars corner, and if that corner doesn't drag him down, that's a touchdown. It ended up being a touchdown a couple plays later, but it's a touchdown in that game against the Jags that clinched the division. So I know Stevie has the eye of the coaches, but you brought up a few guys, you know, the undrafted guys. You know, Johnny Dixon is one that probably everybody knows because he played at Ohio State.
Yeah.
But he's a slot receiver. And, look, he's not as dynamic or, as you would say, as I said earlier, twitchy as Kiki, but he'll catch the football and make something happen. And he's got some juice. He ran in the 4-4 range. You talk about Jester Weah. You know, Jester really kind of popped on the scene last year as a rookie. And big guy, physical, and he's a guy that would be more an outside guy. But the guy that's really impressed, I think, is Johnson, Tyron Johnson out of Oklahoma State. And a lot of people are like, well, wait a second, Oklahoma State, I don't remember him much. Well, he's only there for a year because he transferred from LSU, got an opportunity at Oklahoma State. And Oklahoma State's got a really good number one wide receiver, young guy, going to be a junior this year. His name's Tylan Wallace, and he's unbelievable. And Johnson was sort of second banana to him, so – you really didn't know about him all that much, but he had 60 catches last year. You knew he could play, and then you see him here, and it's like, whoa, he's got something. This guy's got good speed. Not great speed, good speed. He catches everything thrown to him. He seems to have he's understanding the playbook. I don't think he knows inside and out, but he looks like he understands the playbook, and he's seemingly earning the confidence of the coaches. And that's obviously a massive thing as a rookie. So I think it is going to be an unbelievably tough cut at wide receiver. Now, I preface all that with saying, as I started this with, if you knew everybody could stay healthy, well, that's the problem. Kiki played six games last year. Will Fuller played eight. Those guys got injured. You know, Hop played the whole year, but then he was banged up in the Colts game. And then the 2017 to Greenbrier was carnage amongst the receivers. Every single day, receivers were going down. And sometimes receivers were going down that had just gotten there. DeAndre White was one of those guys. So, yes, the receivers have got to stay healthy. If they do, I think this can be as good a group as you're going to find in the AFC and in the NFL. But they've got to stay healthy. At that point, the four guys I mentioned, it comes down to the guys you mentioned. And then throw Stevie Mitchell in there. Are you going to keep two of them, or are you going to keep just one? And then what happens with DeAndre Carter? Because DeAndre Carter – could come back and be a punt returner. He knows the slot game inside and out. He was dynamic for this team when he got on the field and placed a Kiki QT. So where does he fit in this role? The point with all that is I think this is as deep a wide receiver core as the Texans have had in a while, if ever, that I can remember. One, Hopkins, all the way through the end of it, I don't even know who that would be at this point. But I think it's as good a group as they've had in a while, and trying to figure out which five or six are going to make this roster is going to be very difficult come September.
And that's going to come as music to the ears, I'm sure, of many Texans fans out there who obviously want to see a bit more out of this wide receiver core, especially in terms of consistency, because injuries, like you mentioned, have been such a problem the last year or two. I don't know how much of an effect it's going to be in terms of practicing at the NRG now instead of at the Greenbrier. I mean, perhaps there's some sort of background to that we don't know about. Who knows? I mean, we know football players can be very superstitious, so perhaps that's got something to do with it. I doubt it, but you never know. Another player who I've seen doing quite a bit of receiving the last few weeks, which surprised me a little bit, was Cullen Gillespie, the fullback. was brought in obviously this offseason, seventh round pick. I really like that pick because I love his versatility. But something that surprised me is the amount that I've seen of him in terms of receiving, especially with Joe Webb the last couple of weeks. How much do you think we can expect the Texans to perhaps use him as a receiver out the backfield?
Well, here's what you got to remember about Glaspia. And I'll tell you this quick story, Anthony. I went down to A&M Pro Day, and A&M had about eight or nine guys that play or that worked out at the combine. So they all did pretty well. And so I almost didn't go because I knew all the big names had done all their stuff. They were going to not do anything at Pro Day, basically. But I'm like, yeah, you know what? I like Pro Day. A&M's only about an hour and 15 minutes away. I'll go. And so I was standing with my videographer. We're standing right behind the 40-yard line or the 40-yard dash. And so I'm watching some guys go, and they call him up, and he runs. I'm like, that's a really good time. Like, that's a really good time. And I wasn't sure what it was, but just watching it and having seen 40-yard dashes over the years, I realized that's a really good 40. Okay, well, what happens when he runs the second one? He runs the second one, and it was the same thing. That time, I timed it. I looked down, and my timer said somewhere in the 4.5s. I'm like, whoa. But, again, I'm timing it, so I was like, okay, maybe it's 4.7. Well, then it comes out that the scouts had him at about 4.55, and I'm like, wait a second. He's 6'1", about 240, and just ran 4.5, and he's got fullback. This guy's going to get drafted by somebody, and I just didn't know it was going to be us. Well, he came to our local pro day, and he ran the same time. He had a good workout, and I think the Texans looked at it and said, look, there's no question we can use you. Special teams first and foremost, but with no fullback last year, I think they felt, I don't want to say they felt like they were going without, but I think they looked at it and it felt like, man, if we'd had a fullback for these plays or this set of plays, we'd be much better off.
Yeah.
And then you look at a guy like that and you think, oh, wait a second, this guy can be a factor at fullback. He can help us on special teams for sure. Oh, by the way, he's a pretty good athlete who can catch the ball out of the backfield. And, you know, I did some telestrators on the rookies, and hopefully they'll be coming up on our TV shows and we'll be able to put them out there. And so I got some from our film department, and the plays they sent me, there were three receptions showing what he can do when he catches the ball out of the backfield. So I think in the, you know, when you think about Bill O'Brien and the origins of his offense, the fullback has always been a part of it. Catching the ball out of the backfield, you know, obviously blocking and doing those sort of things. And when he was with the Patriots, he had a guy named James Devlin who played at Brown University. So they used Devlin a lot as a blocker, but they would use him as a pass receiver. So from that perspective, I think they want to be able to use the fullback in that way. And I don't know that Jay Prosh was ever, you know, that kind of guy. I don't think that was his thing, if you will. I think Jay was, you know, was thought to be more of a run blocker, and that was what he was going to do. You know, he could catch the ball, but I don't think he was quite the athlete that Cullen is. And I think with Cullen, you're going to get really good special teams play and have that opportunity to use him in the backfield and do some good things with him. So, I don't know as a rookie how much time he'll end up getting at fullback, how much they'll want to use the fullback, but he gives them that option. And I think that's the one thing they would have liked to have had at certain times last year. They found a way without it, using Jordan Akins a lot of times in that role, or Jordan Thomas, even Ryan Griffin. But I think if they have a guy who's more a true running back, fullback type, I think that would help them a lot more.
And sticking on offense, how do you feel about the backup quarterbacks, obviously Joe Webb and newly signed AJ McCarron? How have they looked so far?
I'll tell you this. I love watching Brandon Wheaton. I know that's the question you're asking after I'm getting there. I love watching Brandon Wheaton throw the football. I love it. I love watching him throw. But I feel like the coaching staff wanted to get a little bit younger at that position. And they wanted a guy named AJ McCarron that, look, he's the system is new to him. And maybe they felt like there was more upside with AJ. I'll tell you this, Anthony. The one thing that I have seen with McCarron, and I saw him up close in 2012. I went to the SEC championship game, Alabama versus Georgia, and I saw him throw the football. There is a distinct improvement in his arm strength. Like, his arm is a legit NFL arm now. I mean, he's just continued to work on it and get stronger. his arm is much different than it was back when he was in college. Now, that was in 2012. That was 6.5, 7 years ago. But you can still – you can see where he's gotten stronger, where he throws a good ball. Just watch him the other day in OTAs. You can tell he throws a good ball. Now, nobody that I will see other than maybe Warren Moon throws as pretty a football as Brandon Weeden. But I think they just felt more comfortable with a guy like A.J. McCarron, that A.J. could step in if something were to happen to Sean. They could run a lot of the same things offensively with A.J. Maybe they didn't feel like they could do that with Brandon. So they decided to go with A.J. McCarron. And look, Joe Webb to me is the ultimate Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
I love having Joe around. So he's always a great option. And he was on the 46-man roster, I think, every single game last year. So that's always a great – it's always a great luxury to have when you think about most times you only carry two quarterbacks. Well, who's your third quarterback? For years it was Shane Leckler. Well, the nice thing is you have an actual quarterback who is your third quarterback, but you're using him on game day, which is kind of nice, in Joe Webb. It's a nice security blanket to have. But look, I said this to somebody the other day, if Deshaun goes down, I didn't say it in so many words, I was like, we're all in trouble. But the key thing really is the fact that A.J. can step in, hasn't played a lot in the NFL, but, you know, when he was asked to do that in 2015 when Andy Dalton went down, he won some big ball games for Cincinnati. So I would not put it past A.J. to do some things, especially in the preseason, to really kind of show it off. And look, what if A.J. just completely destroys the preseason and somebody gets hurt somewhere else and some team says, hey, we'll give you a second or a third rounder. I mean, look, that's crazy, but things have happened. We've seen quarterbacks go down right before the season starts, and they look around the league and look for a competent backup that can step in and do some good things. You know, Jacoby Brissett getting traded to Indianapolis a few years ago. Teddy Bridgewater going down. Minnesota needing a quarterback, and they trade God knows how many draft picks for Sam Bradford. And look, those really didn't work out. For Indianapolis, it did. I mean, Jacoby did some good things for him, but you just never know. But A.J. McCarron is going to have that opportunity to show it off in the preseason, because look, Deshaun will get his reps, not much, probably a drive, maybe two in the preseason each game, and then it's going to be A.J. McCarron for the majority of those games. So he's going to be able to put a lot of stuff on film, and I think Texans fans should feel pretty good about what they've gotten a backup for A.J. McCarron. If he's got to step in, if Deshaun goes down for a little bit or whatever, then okay, look, the team's not going to be as good as it could be, but I think with A.J. McCarron, you feel like he's going to at least get in the driver's seat and continue to drive it. Maybe not as well as Deshaun, but he's going to at least be able to drive the machine, and that's really what you want from a backup quarterback.
Absolutely. I think you made a really great point there about McCarron. They've got a real tradable commodity there if needed. If teams obviously need a backup quarterback, he's a very good option. He's proven, like you said, to some extent in the NFL. So I think it was a very shrewd move bringing him in, I must admit. And I'm glad you mentioned Joe Webb there and his versatility. I think he really defines what O'Brien wants. He loves versatility in players. He loves players who can play in multiple positions. And Joe Webb and Colin Gillespie, they sort of define that, don't they? I mean, Webb played at receiver last year as well as special teams. Gillespie has played at linebacker in the past. I think he even said he played at safety at one point. And obviously now at fullback, he can do a bit of running and receiving. So, I mean, he loves those versatile players, and it's great to see players like that on this roster. Now, with Jadeveon Clowney still absent, there's obviously a spot there on open in OTAs at the moment. Has anyone really shone in his absence so far?
Well, Anthony, I think so. I think that Whitney Mercilus has done a really nice job just watching him. And look, there are no pads on. He's going against some rookies, going against some guys as the offensive line is still trying to find their role up front. But I just feel like watching Whitney, you see the get off, you see that first step, you see that explosiveness, you see the things that made him such a valued commodity for this defense prior to his injury in 2017. And there's been a lot made about Whitney last year, used in a lot of different ways in a different way than what maybe he is best at doing. And look, if JD is not here and not ready to go, Whitney's going to get a lot of those reps, and he's going to get a lot of opportunity to come off the edge. And the one thing that I've always said about Whitney is he's a lot like an artist in that he's got a lot of different ways to paint a picture. He's good using oils. He's good with watercolor. He's good with, you know, pencil if he's got to use it. He's got all these different pass rush tools. You know, a lot of guys coming into the league now, they maybe have one way to get to the quarterback. Well, this guy uses speed, or this guy uses power. This guy's speed to power. That's all he can do. Whitney's throwing moves. He's got a litany of pass rush moves that he can use. He can paint a pass rush picture in a different way than a lot of guys can. And that's got to be something that he continues to do, because this team has got to have that pass rush. And look, if JD is not, I don't even know what's going to happen with that situation. And I want it to work out. I love JD. I love, going back to your word, as you mentioned it, it's where people talk about versatility. I love the fact that you never know where he's going to line up any given play. Because now the offense has got to try and find him. Where's 90? Where's 90? And at some point you forget where 99 is. Or you forget where 59 is. But I think it's Devion's absence. I think Whitney Mercilus has really stepped up this spring and shown some good stuff. But it just looks like that burst, that explosiveness of getting off the ball and rushing and dropping his shoulder and getting to the quarterback. It just seems like it's smooth, fluid, and easy for him this spring. That's been really nice to see.
So do you think we might see some of the return of sort of the prime Mercilus this year? I mean, last year, like you mentioned, wasn't necessarily his best year. Do you think we could really see some of his best play come back soon?
I hope so. I mean, again, keeping everybody healthy, hopefully that's the case. But I just feel like with Whitney, when he can do a lot. And I think that's – and people – I know a lot of people around here. I know some of my friends over at Sports Radio 610 are like, I hate the versatility word. I hate versatile. And I get it. But Whitney can do a lot of things. But what he's best at doing is lining up and going one-on-one against the tackle and getting to the quarterback. That's what he's best at doing. And I don't think you can put a high enough premium on guys that can do that. But the way the Texans were playing the defense last year, they would use Clowney and Watt on the outside, and that would force Whitney, if he was in with them, to have to play, kind of a 4-3 outside linebacker role and drop into coverage. And he can do it. It's one of those things where he can do it, but it's not second nature to him. But rushing the quarterback, because all the different ways that he can do that, that's where Whitney is best served. And I hope it's a return to 2016, because if it is, for him, well, this pass rush is going to be so darn dangerous, whether JD is back or not, if Whitney is at that level that he was before his injury.
Absolutely, and I completely agree, especially if you throw in the likes of DJ Reader, who I think is really underrated, and they've got some great players there in pass rush. So obviously everyone's been talking about the offensive line. Obviously that was one of the biggest problems with the Texans last year. I think it's safe to say they brought in two rookie first and second rounders on the offensive line. What about the undrafted free agents they've brought in as potential backups for the line, DJ Coker and Malcolm Pridgen? How have they looked so far? Do you think they've got a potential outside shot of making the roster?
Well, here's where I think this year going to be a little bit trickier for the undrafted rookies and the guys you mentioned. I think they'll have an opportunity for a practice squad spot. But here's I don't want to say a problem with the offensive line, but Anthony, they are still, and they will do this, I think, going on at the training camp. They're still trying to figure out who fits where and how. And I think where that kind of gets in the way, if you will, of the rookie undrafted in particular, is that you're going to have different combinations. So when the first offensive line goes, you'll have five guys. Well, when the second offensive line goes in, you might use a couple of those guys that were with the first line. Okay, you were guard here, but now he wants to play tackle here. So you just may not have as many reps available to the younger guys than maybe normally if you had, say you had a solid five. Say, go back to 2011. Say you had a solid five of Dwayne, Wade, Chris Myers, Rizel, and Winston. You had those five guys, and you knew that was the five, and away you go. Well, then your task would be, okay, we got to find the depth behind them. So you could give more time to some of the undrafted free agents. You give more time to some of the young guys or some of the veteran backups because you knew what you had with the front five. But you don't know what that front five is going to be early on in training camp, and you got to figure that out. So unfortunately, for a guy like Malcolm Pridgen, he may not get as many reps. He may not get second-team reps in training camp like he might if you had a set five. Now, maybe in a year's time, we have a discussion. Okay, we know what the front five is going to be. Okay, now maybe you got some young guys and some young vets that are going to be vying for those backup jobs, okay, we can see how this is going to go. There are a lot of bodies in the offensive line, Anthony. I mean, a lot. You think about Shantrell Henderson being back and Matt Khalil being signed, and then two draft picks. I mean, those are – that's four guys that they didn't have. Now, obviously, there's no Kendall Lamb's not here, so you're still plus three in the bodies that you brought to the offensive line. Then you bring back, obviously, Martinez Rankin, and hopefully he'll be healthy this year. So you've got a lot of bodies that are vying for probably seven, eight spots on the offensive line. So that's going to make the first and second team reps. They're probably going to, I think, they're probably going to add first and second team reps for those guys and maybe lessen the number three reps they're going to get. Like those, the number three group may not get as many reps in practice. They may get some reps in games, but maybe not as much as they might have if they had a starting five set. Now, next year, different story. But I watched Pridgen in particular when he was at Ohio State. And to me, he looked like he was a project. He's a guy that you could work with. So I would love to see him as a guy that could, you know, get on the practice squad, because we've mentioned this a few times. We've seen injuries, especially happen on the offensive line, that have moved things around. I mean, it took all of two series last year for them to move or to lose Shantrell Henderson.
Absolutely.
To put Martinez Rankin in the game, who had basically hadn't had pads on all training camp, and moved Julian Davenport, who doesn't really play the right side, to move him to the right side. That took all two series. And that was to protect the guy who was coming off an ACL tear and Deshaun Watson, a quarterback. So they've hopefully will not run into that situation. I think there's more depth. I think there are more bodies. So I think that's really going to help the front line guys, but I don't know if it's really going to help those undrafted guys. They may not get as much time as they're used to getting, especially when you've got a full and competent offensive line that's already set in stone. And hopefully we get there next year. We're just not there this year.
Well, let's hope it's certainly improved this year. I think we're definitely on the right tracks for it, but I think it's going to take some time. So I like to close off by throwing my guests off just a little bit. So with that in mind, I've seen numerous top 10 players sort of videos on the NFL Network, that sort of thing, per franchise. So top 10 Broncos, top 10 Eagles, for example. Who would you put as your top five Texans of all time so far?
Okay. Right now, I mean, obviously Andre goes up there, full career, books written, very good book, excellent book. I think Andre's up there. You have to put Watt. Andre, Watt, and I think you got to put Hopkins right now. I know Hopkins isn't finished with his career, but I think you got to put Hopkins.
He's got to be up there.
I know some people, yeah, those three to me seem, I don't know if they slam dunk, but they feel pretty solid. I wouldn't put Deshaun there yet just because I want to give it a little bit more time to marinate, but I know he's going to be there in due time. But I'll just go with those three for right now. But I think the other two, and Drew Doherty is sitting in front of me, and I know we've debated this before. I think the other two to me are, I don't want to say no-brainers, but I think I feel pretty solid about it being Arian Foster and Dwayne Brown.
Absolutely.
I think those are, to me, I think those are the five.
I must admit, I did this list yesterday to try and give it a go myself, and those are the five that I put in there as well. I think they're both pretty solid at the moment, but I agree. I think Deshaun will be in there in due course.
Yeah, I think Deshaun will get in there. I think the question becomes, who do you bump out at that point? And that's tough to try and figure out. I think people, now that we're years removed from Arian, I think people start to understand how good Arian actually was. And he was phenomenal. He was just so good.
He really was.
And obviously, with some of the offensive line troubles that we've had, I think people have appreciated Dwayne Brown a lot more than maybe they did while he was here. And obviously, he left, and there was some acrimony about it from both sides. So I think there's probably some of that. And hopefully, in due time, that dies down. But I think that's the five, and in whatever order. I think it's Watt, Hopkins, Andre, Arian, and Dwayne. And look, this is how I look at it, Anthony. If you can just use the first name of a guy and you know exactly who you're talking about, then that guy is probably making your top five. If you say JJ, you know who you're talking about. You say Andre, you know, or Dre, you know who you're talking about. You know, the same with Dwayne, Arian. When you say Dwayne, you know where you're talking about Dwayne Brown. You don't have to use the last name. Then you're probably talking about a top five player for that team.
I couldn't agree more. And then finally, we've seen this somewhat ridiculous beer chugging fad passed through the league from team to team across the past couple of weeks, and we've yet to see a single Texan partake. Who do you think? So pick one player from the locker room and one of the coaches. Who do you think would win?
Well, I can tell you the coach, but I'd have to kill you. As far as players go, that's an interesting question. You always feel like it's got to be an offensive lineman, but our offensive linemen are kind of some button-down dudes. But I know there are probably a few that can let their hair down a little bit. If Shane Leckler were here, Shane Leckler would be my choice. But Shane's not here anymore, so this is kind of tough, to be honest. And I've thought about this for a little bit, like, who would it be? I wish Ben Jones were here. That would be
a slam dunk, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be the other option. And obviously, when he got to Nashville, he did it with the Titans, so he would be that guy. It probably feels like it should be an offensive lineman. So the biggest offensive lineman to me is Chantrell Henderson.
Yeah.
So I'll say Chantrell, just because when he would have a can of beer in his hand, it would look like a teacup. So I'll go with Chantrell Henderson only because Chantrell is the biggest guy on the team.
I think I can agree with that. And with regards to coaches, I think I'm personally going to go for Coach Cushing. I think I don't think anyone would want to beat him in that. Let's be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I'm going to plead the fifth on the coaches. Because I know a lot of them, so I'll just plead the fifth.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for joining me. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
I'm on social media. I should do a lot more than I do, but at Jay Harris Football, you follow me there. I talk a lot of Texans. I do a lot of college football talk there, too. Probably should do more of that, and we'll try to do more of that. It's funny because I know the Texans, the NFL, pretty well, but college is really, for me, where I kind of cut my teeth and where I did a lot of my work. So, at Jay Harris Football on Twitter, and that's my only social, Anthony. I've pared it down. Actually, I don't even know if I say pared it down. That's just all that I do. It's all I have time to do, I guess.
Certainly. I, to be honest, I'm exactly the same. John, thank you very much for being on the show. It's been great to speak to you.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Appreciate you having me.
I've been your host for the week, Anthony Wood. Keep up today with everything Texans at the Texans Wire of USA Today. And, of course, follow me on Twitter at ARWoodNFL. Thank you very much for listening.